love midnight movies, don't you? But can you handle midnight movies 24 hours a day?
Your death will be indescribable.
Find out on Black Flag TV. The first viral television on the web. Black Flag TV is entirely dedicated to haunting horror, science fiction, and cult movies. Broadcasting live, 24 hours a day, obscure independent movies and classic horror. Make Black Flag TV your sanctuary for the horror genre.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Visit us now, blackflag.tv.
Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Devour the Podcast. I'm your host, David, and along with me is Jamie.
Hi, everyone, and thank you.
So, how are you this week?
I'm doing great, you know, fully recovered after last week, which was a whole lot of fun, so, and I'm glad to be back.
Awesome. So this week we've got our for straight to video, or fuck, I came from the instant queue. I'm thinking of another show that does a straight to video segment. We're doing Retard Dead, and for our feature presentation, we are doing House of the Devil. So that's pretty much it for pre-show stuff. Oh, yeah, I also watched Piranha this weekend, which was awesome.
The remake or the original?
The remake.
Okay, I loved it.
It was fucking hilarious.
I loved it. The part where, what's his name? Oh, Eli Roth gets smeared. I just thought that was so classic.
That was pretty awesome. Yeah, I bought it like last week at a Walmart for like $5. And I finally got around to watching it this past weekend. And it was fucking hilarious.
I've seen it probably 3 times. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
everything from the very beginning. You get the whole Hooper thing in the very beginning. Drinking beer and boobs and blood. And I mean, come on, who can not love that?
I really regret not getting the seat in the theater because I had planned to go see it, but I just didn't for whatever reason. I think I just didn't have time. But it was a blast. I really enjoyed the hell out of it. The CGI looks fucking terrible, but. The practical effects are great, so, and it was just bloody as all hell, and I absolutely loved it.
When I saw it in the theater, there was this, right at the end of the credits, this little family came in, and it was like a mom and a dad and 3 little kids, little bitty kids, mm-hmm. And they came in and they sat behind us, and I thought, I wonder, really, did they mean to bring into this movie? Now, I mean, I went to movies like that when I was a kid, but things are different now. I mean, no one really paid attention back then. Now, I don't know, it just seems odd. So I'm like, I wonder if they did that on purpose. Well, then at the very end of the credits, you've got I don't remember if it's like a skull or an eyeball or something that pops up. And then like one of the fish just like comes up and chomps it or something. It was like the very end credits thing, you know, and then the little kid goes, and the father goes running out and then comes back in and grabs the whole family and goes running out. They meant to go to the theater next door. There was like an animated movie next door.
This isn't Rango.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, yeah, I fucking loved it. It's always nice to see Elizabeth Shue in stuff. She was great in fucking Hamlet 2 a couple years ago, and she was great seeing her in this, and Ving Rhames is great in everything. And Jerry O'Connell was fucking fantastic as the sleazy promoter guy.
Oh, yeah, he totally was. And you can tell he had a great time with that role.
Oh, yeah.
But he was so good at that.
Oh. That was just, I fucking love that movie. The movie was hilarious. It was totally worth it. I was pretty drunk at the time, but it was awesome. So, all right, let's go ahead and jump into the news.
Be quiet a second, will you?
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny!
Thank you. I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Game over, man! Game over!
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
All right, so all of our news is once again coming from Blade Disgusting because it's the easiest place to get news from. And because, you know, pretty much everybody else gets the news from them. So first up, Elizabeth Stanley and Mary Lambert's original series, The Dark Path Chronicles, is being re-released via Cinetics film buff label on a number of video on demand platforms on April 17th. The series will run as one 30-minute film on YouTube, YouTube VOD, Amazon Instant Video, Vudu, PlayStation, Cinema Now, and Xbox. And The Dark Path Chronicles follows Samantha, a gifted young woman who encounters a rogue vampire named Jurgen. Despite the warnings of her friends, she follows him to the mysterious dark path and finds herself caught in the middle of a life-threatening struggle between good and evil. For more information about Dark Path Chronicles, please check out the Facebook, which is facebook.com/Dark Path Chronicles.
Well, that's interesting. I like Mary Lambert.
Her name rings a bell. I can't place why, though.
She directed Pet Sematary.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's on my instant queue, though.
Fun!
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to do that. We'll have to do that one day.
So there is that. I did kind of glance at the Facebook page this morning, but I just didn't pay that close of attention. Let's see. AMC is teaming up with Robert Kirkman again for... They are developing his newest comic, Thief of Thieves, the Hollywood Reporter has learned. The Image Comics Skybound title revolves around a master thief with a dual identity who, while struggling to quit the business, opts to steal only what has already been stolen. Released in February, the first two issues of Thief of Thieves each sold out on their respective release dates. Issue 3 is in stores today, which is Wednesday. Nick Spencer penned the first arc of Thief of Thieves with Kirkman on board as the head writer to oversee the series. So I guess AMC's hoping that it'll do as well as Walking Dead did.
Well, you know how it is. Whenever you get something that works, then the next thing that you do is you try to find something else that's going to work just as well.
Yeah.
Or even close to it.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe they figure they need to try to do something to keep people busy when Walking Dead is on hiatus, because it always seems to be on freaking hiatus. I mean, like, every time you turn around, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I watched maybe the first 3 episodes of season 2 and then just forgot it was on the rest of the time. So I have to catch up with season 2 at some point. I mean, season 1 was fantastic, and what I saw of season 2 was good, but I just totally forgot it was on half the time. Hopefully that will be hitting instant queue soon, because that would be really nice. So here's a bit of weird news that'll probably spark a bit of a conversation. David Gordon Green is set to remake Suspiria, and production is slated for September. The Pineapple Express helmer David Gordon Green is now working from a script he wrote with Chris Gerbert, with the search now on for Susie, the young protagonist who travels to Europe to attend a world around school. After a series of brutal murders, the young American student learns that the Academy is a front for something way more sinister than education. News comes from Deadline, who reports that the film is being backed by Crime Scene Pictures, and they're hoping
it's going to be crap. Well, no, I like to give things a chance,
yeah.
You know, and I really don't have anything against David Gordon Green. I really enjoyed Pineapple Express I thought it was a fun stoner comedy. Eastbound and Down, I think, is a great show. I loved it. But I don't know. The thing about Suspiria is that it's not really story driven.
No, it's really not.
It's not plot driven. You don't even give a shit what the plot is, really. I mean, I don't. When I watch it, I am sort of aware that there is something going on, but really what sucks you into that film are the visuals, mm-hmm. The sounds. It's more an experience, I guess, than it awakens your senses. And I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of people feel that way. I can't imagine someone capturing that, the same way. And I can't imagine trying to force the plot into it, because then it's just a totally different movie. So, I mean, even though the plot is there, you don't really pay attention to it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, the plot is there, and it's not one of his best stories, but it is, I think, one of his better films, just artistically speaking. It's one of his movies that very much you can kind of pass off as being everything that happens is sort of just, it's a dream, in a sense that it flows on dream logic. Actually, there was a video that a friend posted on like Facebook something about the film. It was a group of film critics who were all young men who were doing a. The one guy was a fan of Argento, and they were doing an episode about Argento. So he showed them Deep Red, Inferno, and I think Phenomena. And then the two guys who had not seen the movies agreed that Deep Red was the best of the three, and then proceeded to rip apart Phenomena and Inferno. Oh, and they did Opera too. That was what it was, I think. Those three, yeah. And it was hilarious watching it, because the guy was just like having a little nerd breakdown because they didn't like Argento. And I was like, well, first of all, you gave them
nerd breakdown.
Yeah, he really was. He's just like, oh my god, you're shitting on everything I love. It's like, dude, you gave them like three of the worst movies to introduce someone to Argento with.
Why didn't he give them Suspiria?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. It's like, first of all,
because even though the plot sucks, I mean,
it's at least a pretty movie, and it makes some kind of sense.
The film itself is mesmerizing.
Yeah,
you know, it really is. And anyone who appreciates visuals will appreciate that movie.
Yeah.
I don't really understand why he would, if he's such a lover and wanted them to agree with him, why not give them one of the best things he's ever done visually?
Yeah. I mean, I love opera for what it is. It's not a perfect film by any stretch. It's also one of the movies that he during Argento's obsession with heavy metal, where he uses terrible, terrible heavy metal in the wrong places. Oh, Jesus Christ, I hate that fucking Steel Grave song so much. Phenomena is really not that good either, honestly. That's, quite frankly, a terrible movie that makes little to no goddamn sense. And,
you know, I honestly have not seen that in a very long time. I watched that one when I was much younger and didn't care for it.
Yeah.
So I haven't watched it again. I really should. You know, it's been way too long, and I really should give it another shot. But I think Argento, I don't know. I tend to just, if I'm in the mood, I'll watch Deep Red.
Yeah.
I'll watch Suspiria, you know. And that mood doesn't really hit all that often. I have to be in a very particular frame of mind.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy the work of his that I've seen. I've really liked. I mean, I own Deep Red. I own Suspiria. I've got Opera, which I've seen a couple times. Inferno, I like Inferno for what it is, but it's not a great movie by any stretch. I really like Jennifer, the Masters of Horror episode he did. I really like Do You Like Hitchcock, which I know a lot of people hated, but I enjoyed it. Trying to see what other Argento stuff I've got. Mother of Tears was fucking horrible. That was an abomination.
You know, I still haven't seen that. I was kind of miffed at him, because I was supposed to interview him when that movie came out, and I was, as far as being on the phone, about three times. And then it would get, well, you know, Mr. Argento's, he'll have to get back to you. And I'm just like, well, then I was like, fine, you know, I'm not watching it. Grr, you know,
you're really not missing anything. That movie was fucking terrible. This is from somebody who really, I mean, I enjoy Argento's work, the ones that I've seen, like I said, and I own Cat of Nine Tails and Bird of the Crystal Plumage somewhere. I just haven't watched them yet. But it's like a lot of his later, pretty much anything after Suspiria or Deep Red is really hit or miss. And it's kind of the same way I feel about Wes Craven, is that he's got some really good movies and the rest of it's just sort of hit or miss.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. I really enjoy Wes's early stuff. You know, when it gets really polished, like, say, Cursed.
I never saw Cursed.
It made me so mad. And I realized with that film in particular, there were a lot of rewrites going on. There was a lot of, I mean, he kind of fell into the same thing that House of Thousand Corpses fell into,
yeah.
You know, and it ended up being a jangled mess of not what he originally intended.
Right.
But still, it's just, then don't put it out there. You know, I mean, you are who you are. If you don't like it, if you don't want it to represent you, then don't put it out there.
Yeah.
Because it really just, it didn't do anything for him. And genre fans are becoming so angry when it comes to Wes Craven. And, you know, I hate that, because I do feel like he has a lot of vision, and I like where he goes when he goes there. But frequently these days, he just is in the habit of barely getting off the sofa, you know.
Yeah, I honestly was thinking about this earlier, because Last House on the Left, I have kind of mixed feelings about it. First time I saw it, I felt just disgusted and didn't. I felt like I needed to take a shower afterwards, and I haven't really seen it since.
That's a perfectly reasonable response to that, you know, and it's a-okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like I don't know how I actually feel about it as a film because I haven't watched it since. I did like the remake. I thought the remake was pretty good. Didn't like the original Hills Have Eyes. I just didn't think it was very good. Alexander Aja's remake was way better, I think. It felt more immediate and more focused, I guess is the best way to put it.
We finally found something that we differ on completely. I am not an Aja fan.
Really?
I'm not. And as much as I loved High Tension, mm-hmm. I feel like I was bitch slapped in the last 5 minutes of that film. And I don't care what anybody says. He could walk up to me right now and tell me that I'm full of shit when I tell him that he made that up at the very end, because I don't buy it. And I don't want to buy it. There was a perfectly decent movie that you had going there, and it was straightforward. You didn't have to do that. So he pissed me off with that. And when it came to Hills Have Eyes, you know, I can see why people enjoy it. Personally, I think it was just mutants on parade. Like, I was so – there were just too many mutants for me. Where do you find that many mutants outside of a circus?
Well,
and even he had Robert Joy, whom I love. I adore Robert Joy, and I will watch him in anything. And when he took the head off that bird, I was like, yay, you go, Robert. And there are things about it I did like. But I don't know. I just felt like there were just mutants everywhere. And
I think that it's one of those. Well, with High Tension, I can agree with you to a point that I kind of felt cheated at the end the first time I watched it, because I was like, it had such, you'd built up this villain to be such a perfect character. And this is a story I tell quite often about High Tension, is that I was watching the uncut version with my friend at the time. We were hanging out in my living room, and we were watching the French cut because I'm an obnoxious snob that way. And it's the scene where the killer is getting head, and he drops the decapitated head out the window. And yes. My friend, who's this burly dude who's, you know, takes no shit from anybody, goes, I may not finish watching this movie now. And I just laughed and laughed, because I was like, that's a perfect setup for who this character is right there. And then they kind of threw it out the window at the end. But having said that, and having rewatched the movie, and actually talking to a friend who read Latin, and she translated her shirt, which was something about being not who I am. I don't remember exactly what the shirt was, but it was a clue as to what was actually going on. Mm-hmm. I kind of watching it a couple more times, knowing what's actually going on, I kind of enjoy it for, on the one hand, I initially enjoyed it for just being a very tense movie. But now, having seen it again and again, I actually enjoy it more as being, okay, kind of figuring out how this whole thing is a psychotic breakdown for this character, and kind of picking up the clues of how you know what's actually going on from knowing what's going to happen at the very end. But I do understand why people were so pissed about it, because there were a lot of people who were really, really pissed about the end of that movie.
Well, I guess the thing about that movie to me is it doesn't really play as something so cerebral, something so psychological. It's very vicious.
Yeah.
You know, and so you get into this vicious mindset. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like sensory overload sometimes. There's so much stuff going on. There's so much to watch. This guy is such a brute. Mm-hmm. You know, and then in the end, I'm like, And I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, I liked that character. I liked how vicious he was. I love the decapitated blowjob scene. That is the first scene I saw from that movie. Mm-hmm. When that little clip was released before the movie came out, I was like, I am watching this movie. This guy's psycho. And it's just, to me, and like, you know, when he comes in the house and then he has the father, like when he kills the father, right. To me, it is just, he's just so like, oh, you don't want to see that guy in a dark alley.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I find out that the guy didn't even really exist. And it just, I don't know, it kind of broke my heart a little. And
That's kind of how I felt initially. But like I said, watching it again, knowing what's happening, you kind of, especially the reactions of the family, you kind of pick up more from those reactions, because you're like, oh, because they're not seeing this guy, they're seeing the girl. And it kind of adds a little bit more to it, I think.
And I guess, you know, and I've watched it, you know, numerous times, because I do like it.
Yeah.
That's the thing that pisses me off about it. As angry as I was with him, I do enjoy the movie. And then until the very end, and I'm just like, then I get angry all over again. I bitch a lot, you know. But honestly, I just, Mirrors was such crap. I wanted to like it. I really did. And I just I remember walking out of the theater dumbfounded after that movie. The only thing that he's done that I really love is Piranha, and it's kind of sad, you know, that it's the least, you know, it's the least, it's the lowest brow.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, film he's ever done. And yet to me, it's the best and the most fun. Although I have to say that P2 got shit on a lot, but really, I think there were some pretty decent tense moments in that.
See that.
And, you know, it's not, it doesn't suck that bad. It plays a little more like a Lifetime movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not his usual. I mean, if you look at Hills Have Eyes and you look at High Tension and, you know, and Piranha, there's a lot of gore.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of violence. There isn't really that much in P2.
Okay.
So it doesn't, it's almost difficult to even reconcile that they're from the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some, I don't know. I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. But like I said, it was more like, it plays more like a Lifetime movie to me. But you know, it's okay.
Yeah, I didn't. I owned Mirrors at one point. I just never got around to watching it. I think I picked it up super cheap at like Blockbuster and then ended up selling it at some point, so I don't think I have it anymore. Hills Have Eyes, I enjoyed it because I liked the setup of the. I really loved the opening setup of the atomic. You know, the atomic testing and the side effects of what that was. And then when you introduce all these mutants, it's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, maybe these people were just sort of either people who happened to live out there and got, you know, stuck by this, hit by this radiation and just, you know, continued breeding. Because, I mean, honestly, the family in the original wasn't really that interesting other than Michael Berryman, because he's kind of weird looking.
Yeah.
But I liked that they were kind of just, you know, freaky mutants, and it was just bloody and vicious and just all out. And the sequel, by the second one, Hills Have Eyes 2, was fucking terrible. That was a terrible, terrible sequel. They should never have made that crap. I haven't seen P2 yet, but Piranha was fucking awesome, so I really enjoyed that. Yeah, I'll check out P2. I think if I've seen it on Netflix, I might watch it. I'll probably watch Mirrors at some point because I like Kiefer Sutherland, but I just heard
that was another thing that upset me is I love Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
I've been crushing on Kiefer Sutherland since
Lost Boys.
Stand By Me.
Oh.
Even before. So, you know, I adore him, and I was really looking forward to that. And it just, wow. I think what it is that he has some interesting ideas.
Mm.
I don't really care for him as a writer, as it turns out. I guess that's really what it is that visually he has some interesting stuff going on. I don't really care for him as a writer. So I don't feel like he quite sold it.
Oh, that's
okay. And, you know, and there were some okay things with Hills Have Eyes. Another thing, though, about that, the direction in that movie ticked me off because it wouldn't stay still. I mean, it was an example of, I even think I reviewed it and I read my review not too long ago. And I said something about the cameraman. It looked like the cameraman had the palsy through the whole thing. And I'm just like, be still. I want to see what's happening.
Yeah.
And that,
I'm
just slow down.
I'm typically not a fan of the super shaky camera, but I think it really worked in that one because there was so much going on and it really, that one, it really lent itself to those shaky camera moments. But, you know, we'll probably end up doing that one at some point. I'm sure we'll get, we'll do a set of movies that are, you know, originals and remakes.
Oh, that's a good idea.
For a series of episodes, but.
Well, right now I'm going to write down, you like Aja, I don't really. So,
well, I like three of his movies that I've seen.
And I do like Piranha.
Yes, so. Piranha was fucking awesome. And actually, if it's one of those things where, like, if they were going to remake Humanoids from the Deep again, I would like to see him do it because I think he would bring just the right element of awesome to it that it needs.
That could be interesting.
Because, I mean, Piranha, I knew as soon as it was like they were talking about making a Piranha remake, I was just like, oh, this is not going to end well. And then they said Alex and Aja is going to do it. And I saw the trailer and I'm like, okay, he's got it exactly how this needs to be. So that's why when I sat down and watched
it. I will say that for him. I don't think he could have done that any better.
No.
It was perfect. And fans, I mean, I know a lot of people who don't like it, but see, they just wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't like that kind of film, then you're not going to like it. There's nothing I can do to make you like it.
Yeah.
But most people that I have come in contact with just think it's a lot of fun. And that's really what it is. It's a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. I honestly, it's one of those things where it's like, I tend to be very critical of movies that just have heaps of blood and tits in it because it's not how you That's not the direction of a good horror film usually. But when it's used properly, it's like George Lucas said it once, that special effects are a tool. Tits and gore are a tool, and if you use them correctly, they can enhance your story. And it's something like Piranha, where it's, you know, it's basically a creature feature about killer fucking piranhas. You have to set the story up somehow, and it's like, all right, well, there's going to be spring break, so obviously there's going to be a lot of teenage or college age kids running around topless, and there's going to be blood because they're fucking piranhas. And you know, as soon as I heard it was going to be 3D and I saw the trailer, I was like, this is exactly what it needs to be. This is, they're not taking this too seriously. This is going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm. And it was. Yeah. It was.
So that's enough for the news. Let's go ahead and jump into our Came From The Instant Queue selection of Retarded. It came from the instant queue.
Honey, what's wrong?
I had a nightmare.
No, I thought you said the poop man was dead.
No, the evil doctor who made the poop man. He's still alive, Dad.
PhDs in psychiatry, biology, chemistry. But tell me, what interests you about special education?
The serial peeping Tom, known as the Weenie Wagger, struck again last night in this quiet community of Butte County, sending another shockwave through an already terrorized community.
And that's why my face may look a little different than all of you. I'm unique, just like you.
Whoever this individual is, he's masturbating himself into a very lengthy prison term.
Some people pity you. I assure you, I have no pity for you whatsoever. They call you special. I assure you, you are no more special to me than any other lab animal to run my tests on.
His name's Herbert Lee Dalton, a.k.a. Herbert the Pervert. He's got a rap sheet a mile long.
Hey, Herbert. Huh?
Almost to the nurse's office. Just a side effect from the serum I've been administering.
You saw Dr. Stern.
Yeah, man, I swear to God. He looks different, but it's him, man. I think he's doing something to the retards.
A big mistake. Don't let him out. Don't let him out.
Hordes of the infected have been running rampant.
So here we go with Retarded, 2008, written and directed by Rick Popko and Dan West. Rick Popko is Deputy Rick. Tony Adams is Agent Russo. Michael Allen is the Institute Director, and Dan Burr is Dr. Stern. And the synopsis is, the evil Dr. Stern returns, armed with a lethal intelligence serum that yields horrific results at the Butte County Institute for Special Education. I'm just going to say it right now, I fucking hated this movie. It was fucking terrible. Ugh.
Really? You didn't think it was fun?
No, no.
Oh, man, I thought this movie was hilarious.
The opening was kind of funny with the snack thing. It started out funny. And then as soon as it went into the hot dog innuendo and the coffee innuendo, I was like, oh, no. That was too easy and way too oftenly done. And then they went into the terrible trailers, and then the movie started, and for an hour and 42 minutes... I wanted to shoot myself because, Jesus Christ, not only was this boring as fuck, but all the jokes were just terrible. It's just a terrible movie. And honestly, it's one of those things where I try not to be too hard on movies that are, you know, independent, shot on video, things like this. But this is one of those ones where there are so many technical issues with it, too, that it was just I couldn't deal with it. I mean, visual quality aside, I can accept that, you know, shot on video movies look a certain way. That's fine. I'm not going to crap on that. But for the love of God, if you're going to make a feature length movie, A, please don't make it an hour and almost 2 hours long. Make it about 90 minutes if need be. Just keep it concise. There was a lot of parts of this movie that dragged for no real reason. And invest in a fucking boom mic. Jesus God almighty.
Okay, well, I will agree with you. I will agree with you there. Actually, I mean, I can't really argue against you with any of that. You know, I don't, you know, I've got no argument. Not even the papier-mâché heads, you didn't think that was fun?
The special effects, for what they were pretty good. The visual, the computer effects they did, not so great. But that's always a problem I have in low-budget movies where they do, you know, they put so much effort into the practical effects. They look great for, you know, their budget. And then they go and use some crappy CG effects that look terrible. So that if they hadn't done the computer effects, that would have been fine. I'll give them credit. The physical effects looked good. But the story was bad. The dialogue was terrible. The acting was terrible. It dragged on way too fucking long.
I don't know. I was in a different place when I watched this movie because I had a good time with it. I thought it was a lot of fun. Was it good? No.
No.
I mean, it wasn't good. But
I honestly, if I hadn't been reviewing it for the show, I would have shut it off within the first 10 minutes.
Wow.
I just really didn't like it. It's one of those things where it's like, it's not that I don't like lowbrow humor, because I fucking love The Toxic Avenger. And Citizen Toxie, the fourth one, is probably my favorite of the Toxic Avenger movies because it's fucking hilarious. And the greatest line out of the original Toxic Avenger is, I'm going to cornhole me a blind bitch, because that's fucking hilarious. So it's not that I don't like lowbrow humor, because I do. I love trauma movies. They're hilarious, and they're terrible, and completely politically incorrect. But this one just... all of the humor was just so, like... it was jokes that had been done so often before that it wasn't funny anymore. It's like, yes, you... And it just... it was all stuff I'd seen before... and wrapped in a zombie movie, which is another thing that really annoys me, because it seems like every fucking independent filmmaker makes a zombie movie, and 90% of the time they suck.
That's true. That's true. It has been the zombie subgenre has been the catch-all for everyone, because I think everyone thinks it's easy to do. You just get a bunch of people, and who doesn't want to be a zombie? It is so not hard to find extras
exactly
to be in a zombie movie. But, yeah, and I typically am not pleased with that type of fare. I mean, if you're going to do zombies, I like my zombies with some allegory.
Yeah.
You know, I like zombies that, you know, serve a purpose.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm sort of like I'm a Romero nerd, you know?
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, I don't hate every, it's like, there are good independent zombie movies that have been made, but there's the ones that, like Zombies Anonymous, that go way too overboard with the really bad political angles, because that was a fucking terrible movie. And then there's these that go way too far in the direction of really bad humor and trying to do zombies, and they just don't... it's like you can either be Dawn of the Dead or Shaun of the Dead, but if you can't actually write a decent script, you're going to make Zombies Anonymous or Retard Dead. And just, they're not good. It wasn't good. I guess the best way I can sum this movie up was, it was about the same feeling I had while I was trying to watch Taint Light. I got about 10 minutes into that movie and went, nope, I'm done with this. And if I honestly, like I said, if I wasn't reviewing it for the show, I would have shut it off. It was just,
aww. I guess what it is, you know, when I was watching this, I felt like Rick Popko and Dan West, I felt like we were all friends and I was in on the joke, I guess. And it's, you know, and we're not, you know, I am friends with Shannon, who played she was in the Living Dead Girls troupe back then. And, she was the cute one with the pigtails and the red bandana.
That was a scene that bothered the shit out of me. And it really was just one of those things where it's like, I was half watching the movie at that point and I'd seen in the credits that it was the Living Dead Girls. I was like, oh, that's probably not going to end well. And then we get the 5-minute scene of zombie girls dancing around. And I was like, kind of what I expected.
But I guess what it was here is just that, to me, typically I don't like watching experiments that other people make with and for their friends.
Yeah.
You know, like I think it's great if you want to do that, you know, mm-hmm. Yay, I've done it myself.
Yeah.
You know, I've made some movies that really no one should ever see except for the people involved, because they wouldn't want to.
Exactly. You know? That was kind of how I was feeling when I was thinking about this review, was that for as much as I hated it and for as much as I took issue with the technical side of things, you know, it's one of those things where I'm not saying that I've done better, because I haven't. If anybody searches out my YouTube page, which is extremely easy to find, you'll see some of the terrible, terrible things that I've made because it was funny, you know. But it's one of those things where I felt like, if you're going to try and make a movie and you really honestly want to get it, you know, out there, and if it's going to be on DVD or on Netflix, you know, save the money and invest in a better camera. I mean, an HD camera is not that expensive anymore. And for the love of God, get a goddamn boom mic. Get an external microphone, for the love of God.
Well, and, you know, I don't know. I guess I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the inside jokiness of it, I guess. You know, and of course, this is a sort of like a sequel to Monsterd, which I've seen years ago.
And
it's more of the same, really. I mean, these guys are these guys.
Yeah.
I think they're funny. You know, I got a kick out of it. I even loved the theme song at the end, you know, it's just, I don't know, maybe I was in the, I don't know, I liked it. But I wouldn't, I mean, I don't think, I can't stand here and say, yes, this is a great film with a great plot and great acting and great, no, it's not at all. None of that.
Yeah.
I just happened to enjoy it, you know, so I guess it's just going to be, you know, either you're going to be irritated by all of the things that you brought up, and rightfully so. I mean, there, you know, there's nothing that you mentioned that is not legitimate. Or, you know, you're going to just have a good time with it just because.
Yeah.
And then that's the way it is. And so we each fall into two separate categories. So if, like, we were Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, I don't know who would be who's who, because they frequently were both douches. So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's...
Ever since they shit on the slasher genre years ago, I don't know.
I
used to love watching that show, but
yeah, I tried not to. I used to do a column for a horror site I used to work with, which I don't feel like naming at the moment. Everybody can figure out which one it is. But I did a column for super low budget independent horror films, and people sent me their super low budget independent horror films that they'd made. And some of them were good and some of them were bad. And I went into every one of them knowing pretty much that this was not going to be, you know, anywhere near what I would get on a direct-to-video movie from Blockbuster, that this was going to be something, you know, really, really low budget. And I tried to judge them more on story than, you know, acting or the camera work and stuff. And some of them were good, you know, there were some that managed to be really good despite their flaws, and then there were some that just weren't so great because the writing sucked and the acting sucked and, you know, all the bad things just stacked up to being it's a bad movie. That's kind of how I felt about this one. It's like it was not even necessarily a very good story underneath all the stupid jokes and the crap. Even the subplot about, you know, them chasing the sex offender wasn't like, it all felt just like sophomoric humor that maybe if I'd been in high school and written it, I would have thought it was hysterical. But it was just something that's like, yeah, this will probably appeal to a very select group of people. And this is just not something I find enjoyable at all.
Me being one of those.
Honestly, I was watching, I was like, you know what? My buddy who thought Taint Light was hilarious will probably find this great. Because we had an argument about that one too, because I started to watch that and it's some terrible parody of Twilight, which is redundant because Twilight's a parody of itself. But he thought it was great and hilarious, and I thought it was the stupidest fucking thing I'd ever seen, and that's why I turned it off after 10 minutes, because I was just like, this is fucking horrible. But so I would recommend it to him. Otherwise, I honestly, it's one of those movies where you can almost say that you kind of have to expect what you're getting, considering the title is retarded. You know, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, well, the title says it all. If you think the title is funny, maybe you'll enjoy the movie. Because I was kind of expecting it to be more of a Troma style funny, but there was just no. It didn't seem like there was that lighthearted kind of humor that Troma movies has. This was just, let's throw every poop joke we can at the wall and, you know. Bottom line is, I didn't like it, but apparently Jamie did, so.
I thought it was fun. But, you know, I mean, well, watch it yourselves, yeah. People, you know, hey, let us know what you think.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
I'm interested to see, you know, I know of at least one other person who enjoyed it because he watched it last night while I was watching it and we were on Skype.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we didn't watch it at exactly the same time, but, you know, he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm watching Retarded. And he's like, oh, I got to watch that. And so, and he enjoyed it.
Yeah. I saw that on the forum and I was just like, ugh. I was like, I was going to make a snide remark on the forum, but I was like, no, I won't make any snide remarks.
Don't worry. You don't have to worry about offending me.
That was the thing. You know. Like, that was what I was thinking about. I was like, I wanted to be clear that this movie didn't offend me. I just thought it was bad. None of the jokes were offensive or anything. It was just, it was bad. You know, it had nothing to do with being politically correct or being offended. I just thought it was a bad movie.
I hate political correctness anyway,
yeah.
But, you know, and whenever I get the opportunity to fly in the face of political correctness, I try. But, okay, well, then there's, like, wait, I have to make a note. There's another one, you know?
All right. Well, that's it for Retarded. So if you want to see it, it's on Netflix. If not, you're not missing much. So let's go ahead and jump right into our feature presentation of House of the Devil.
And now our feature presentation.
I can tell you like it.
I love it. It's perfect. About the deposit, I'll agree to waive all the deposit stuff. You just give me the first month's down, we'll call it a day, all right? It's hard coming up with all that money, isn't it?
It's gonna work out.
You're not the one with $84 in a bank account and a check to write on Monday.
You know what you should do.
Hi, I'm calling in regards to the babysitter flyer posted outside my dorm.
Tonight's big eclipse is now well underway.
I feel a little weird just dropping you out here, like in the middle of wherever we are.
Because I've not been completely honest.
We're from the desert, you know.
You see, we actually don't have a child.
They lied to you.
I know,
okay,
I know you're right. But it's $400. This equals first month's rent and then some, and all I have to do is sit inside and watch TV. This is huge. This one night changes everything for me.
Thank you.
Are you not the babysitter?
The following review contains spoilers. So, House of the Devil, written and directed by Ty West. This movie came out in 2009, starring Jocelyn Donahue as Samantha, Tom Noonan as Mr. Ullman, and for those of you who recognize the name but can't place the actor, he was Frankenstein in The Monster Squad. Mary Warnove as Miss Ullman, who I recognized but couldn't place what the hell she'd been in. Greta Gerwig is Megan, and Dee Wallace is the landlady. And the synopsis is, in the 1980s, college student Samantha Hughes takes a strange babysitting job that coincides with a full lunar eclipse. She slowly realizes her clients harbor a terrifying secret. First off, Ty West had a lot of goodwill for me going into this. I really enjoyed Cabin Fever 2, which is surprising because I fucking hated Cabin Fever. I have a very strange relationship with Eli Roth in that I hated Hostel, or I didn't like most of Hostel, hated Cabin Fever, and thought Hostel 2 was actually really, really good. But I loved Cabin Fever 2. I thought it was fucking hilarious. It was gross. It had a great kind of retro vibe to it, and I just enjoyed the hell out of it. I don't know why Ty West wanted his name removed from that film, but apparently he didn't like how it turned out. Personally, I thought it was great. So, House of the Devil, I'd heard from various people that it was really, really good, and I had taken forever to get down to watching it, so sat down and watched it last night, and right away, I love that it was never clearly stated when the movie was taking place, that it kind of had a vibe of 80s, late 70s, early 80s going for it, which is really cool. And it's very quickly apparent from Sam has a giant fucking tape recorder Walkman thing.
Mm-hmm.
What tipped me off was actually her headphones, because I was like, wait a minute, I had those a long time ago. Those are old. Those are from the 80s. The fashion is very late 70s, early 80s. But honestly, I fucking love this movie. I thought it was gorgeously shot. It was really well written. It's one of those movies where there's a lot going on for long periods of time where there's not a whole lot going on. It moves and it's got a point of where it's going, but you don't really know what the hell's going on until about the last half hour, maybe 20 minutes of the movie. And then everything goes completely fucking apeshit crazy. And mm-hmm. Blown away, but I fucking loved it. I thought this was great.
Good. I wasn't disagreeing with anything you have to say there. I was just waiting to talk because once I start talking about this movie, it's gonna be difficult for me to stop. So I want to make sure you got everything out that you want to say. Yeah. So, I cannot tell you how much I am in love with this movie. My good friend Bo, that I used to write for Last Blog on the Left. Mm-hmm. And still do occasionally. And we used to do podcasts together.
Yep.
He sent this movie to me. Like, he got this movie. He watched this movie, immediately sent it to me. And he's like, you've got to watch this movie right now. And I said, okay. So I did. And I fell in love with it.
Yeah.
Well, then I read his review. And his review was so adorable because he was so enamored of this film that he wrote it a letter. Like, rather than reviewing it, and it starts out, it's like, Dear the House of the Devil, how are you? I am fine. You know, and then he goes on and talks about how he felt when he was watching the movie. Like, you know, please, please, please come up with yellow titles with the year at the bottom and all that.
Oh,
and
I
he
know.
Did.
I loved
and,
that.
And everything from it was so perfect. If you didn't know any better, you'd think you were watching a movie that you would watch on late night TV
exactly.
when you were a kid. You know, everything was perfect. Everything from the look of the film, the feel of it,
yeah.
the font choice, the font colors,
the
even at the end where you have
so good.
The soundtrack is amazing. The sound in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just love and you know, we can get more into Ty West and that stuff in a minute because I'm a huge fan of his. But the even at the end credits, you know, where it's got the cast and it has, you know, the character and then the little dot, 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 and then the actor. And it kind of sits on the screen for a minute.
Yeah.
That was so perfect. I mean, I'm just, every time I watch it, I'm in awe of how much of a fan he clearly is.
Yeah.
You know, to come out with a film like this. And he edited it as well. So this is 100% him. And it's, I mean, obviously, you know, there were other people on the crew and he couldn't have done it without them. But what I mean is, you know, he wrote the film, he directed the film, and he edited the film. So this is his vision.
Yeah.
And I am in love with his vision. I think that Tom Noonan did an amazing job.
I know, he was so great.
He was so fantastic and he was so creepy. And I can't complain about, I can't complain about anything. There is nothing for me to complain about here.
Like I said, I had seen Cabin Fever 2. I had heard all the controversy about how Ty West wanted his name removed from it, how he didn't want to be associated with it and all that. And then was really confused because I saw it and was like, this movie was awesome. How could you not want your name attached to this? It was gross and it was gory and it was fucking hilarious and it had a great retro vibe to it. It was awesome. I loved it.
I have not seen Cabin Fever 2.
I fucking loved it. It was...
I'm afraid of it. I'm afraid of it because I am a big Ty West fan. And I really haven't heard that many good things about it. So, and I didn't care for the first one.
That was my thing. Was I went
did
into
not
it
like the first one.
Not liking the first one. And I went into it going, all right, this is a direct-to-DVD sequel, whatever, I'll just watch it. It has a very retro feel, like this one does. It was very funny. Like I said, very gory, very over the top with the gore and the gross outs and also just, you know, the humor was there and it had a very, like, it was obviously set after the events of the first one. And the first one was obviously set in modern times, but it had that very retro feel that House of the Devil has.
Mm-hmm.
Although in obviously House of the Devil, it's clearly set sometime in the late 70s, early 80s. And I honestly, like you said, the beginning where we're introduced to Sam in the house with Dee Wallace. And then I was waiting for the credits to go. I was like, okay, where's the title? And it's going slowly. And then that music starts up and we get the great House of the Devil title. And I was just like, oh, this is awesome. And
yeah,
it was just,
from that moment.
Yeah,
I was
from there on. I was just like, this is awesome. And the music was perfect throughout. It had the perfect, just that weird 80s synth. It was, it honestly, like you said, it really was like something that would have come out of the 80s. Just everything about this movie was just amazing. The cinematography, especially some of the shots that he did, some of the angles were really good. My only real complaint was the very, very end when she's running through the graveyard. The shaky cam felt just awkward to me in that sense, because so much of the movie had been very smooth, very centered shots. The shaky cam there was a little bothersome, and the sudden flashing lights during that last, you know, 20 minutes of the movie was a little bit like, ah, fuck, what the hell? So it's a good thing I don't have epilepsy, because that would have set me off.
I do love, I love the pace.
Yes.
The pace of this film, I think, was just, I love watching a filmmaker who can relax and take his time and allow something to build.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a long time, you might feel like there is nothing happening here. You know, she's wandering around the house. She's ordering pizza. She's wandering around the house some more. And then you get that great little, oh, that sublime little montage where she's dancing.
I know.
I was in heaven watching this.
Yeah.
And he did. He stepped back. He took his time. And he said, you know, I'm telling this story, but I'm going to tell it at my pace.
Yeah.
And you're going to watch it and you're going to like it.
And that was the thing.
And I did.
You know, at the very beginning, it talks about the, you know, the satanic ritual abuse scare of the 80s and how, you know, setting that whole thing up about how this is, you know, based on true events or whatever. And then we go for so long where seemingly nothing is happening and it's just building towards something. And I really enjoyed that because, you know, they kept hammering home the whole thing about the eclipse. And I was thinking, okay, well, obviously the eclipse has to do with something. There's obviously going to be Satanists involved somewhere. And fuck it, I'm going to put a spoiler alert on this episode anyway. So the first major moment of something fucking finally happening, and it really wasn't like I was waiting for something to happen, but it was just like, it was a shock that it happened, was when when Megan gets killed.
Oh my God.
Because it's like the movie has been going for so long, and like, it's got this kind of nice placid pace. It's going at a good, it's going, and not a whole lot of weird stuff's happening, but you kind of get the feeling that Mr. and Mrs. Ullman are not quite right. And then, you know, all of a sudden, all of a sudden she's just, her fucking face is on the windshield and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And it's that, like, oh my God. And yeah, like just everything else. It's like, there's the moment where you can kind of say, okay, why is she doing this? Like when she's sort of like wandering around the house, she's like, oh, well, why is she looking around? But then at the same time, well, she's bored and we have to move the plot along somehow. But I like the way that the hints are dropped, that, you know, they mention, oh, we don't have a kid. We have, you know, it's our mother. You know, we have a grown son. And then she finds the room that a small child would have. And that's kind of your first hint of what the hell is actually going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't, you know, nothing major really happens until that last 20 minutes or so, when she hears something rattling around upstairs and she sees the, you know, we see the dead family in the other room, and she's, you know, listening into that room to hear if there's something in there, but there's nothing happening. And then the crazy fucking ending sequence with fucking madness. So I honestly really loved this movie. I thought it was great. I laughed a little bit when they cut back to the Frightmare Theater segment. And it was Night of the Living Dead, because
Night of the Living Dead.
I bet it's going to be Night of the Living Dead, because it's one of those. It's the.
It's always Night of the Living Dead.
It's always Night of the Living Dead.
I even made that comment last night. I'm like, you know, I was like, do you know? Because I was watching it with my friend Jen, and I'm like, it's always Night of the Living Dead. And she's like, yeah. Apparently, there's only one channel on TV ever.
And it's
always, and they always show Night of the Living Dead. She's like, it's the best channel in the world, but it only has. There's only one.
Yeah. Because it's like they're like, oh, Frightmare Theater is next. And I'm like, if they go back to that, I bet it'll be Night of the Living Dead. And it's because it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's always going to be Night of the Living Dead, because it's A, an iconic movie, and B, it's public domain, so everybody can use it. And that's,
it's a damn good public domain movie that, you know, you can count on. And you know, genre fans will always appreciate it.
Yeah, I think that's why everybody uses it, because it's like, you could use something like Carnival of Souls or any number of other public domain movies, but that one feels more recognizable. And it's one of those instantly, like, that one right there will center the movie in some sort of reality for you, I think.
Well, it automatically makes me smile, yeah. You know. And I did hear, you know, there was a comment made, and I honestly can't remember who made it now, but about how, you know, you get really irritated when you're watching a movie and the movie that they use in the movie is better than the one you're watching, you know. And I'm like, yeah. God, I'd rather be watching fucking Night of the Living Dead right now. But you don't feel that with this one.
Oh, not at all.
This is not at all an example of that. This is an example of, this is a really damn good movie who just happens to use another really damn good movie within that movie. You know, and I am...
Was this Ty West's first film?
No.
Okay.
No. And I didn't actually see... He did a short called The Wicked, which I have not seen. But his first feature length was The Roost. And if you haven't seen it...
No, I haven't. I've heard of it, but I have not seen it yet.
I would recommend it, and I'm about to tell you why, because there are things about it that people will turn their nose up at, and I can totally understand it. Well, for one, Tom Noonan is in it, and he's really fun. But, no, I mean, that's not the turn your nose up at part. That was...
how can you not like Tom Noonan?
But, no, I love Tom Noonan. But when this movie was coming out, mm-hmm. I was watching the internet and I was like, I want this movie to come out now, you know? And, so it finally did. And it's not great in the plot is not something like, wow, you know, and
no,
you don't get the fantastic visuals that you get with House of the Devil. But what you do get is you get a real sense of who he is going to be as a filmmaker. You get a real sense of what he appreciates, mm-hmm. and the sound design and the score.
Yeah.
That movie alone make me happy. I mean, you can take the rest of it. I don't care, but give me the score and give me the thought that he put into the sound design. You're watching that movie and you feel like you're watching, I don't know. I mean,
it's really any movie from the late 70s, early 80s.
Yes.
I honestly, yeah. when I started watching it, I knew Ty West had done Cabin Fever 2. I didn't know what else he had done, and I assumed this was his first film. And with that thought in mind, I was like, wow, he's got a very clear, very obviously a very clear idea of what he wants and what he's trying to achieve. Visually, with the audio, with the soundtrack, which was fucking perfect. Just everything is just exactly. It's perfect.
There's nothing wrong with it. And with the roost, do you know that when I talked last week, I was talking about how like one sure way to really freak me out is to have the creature, whatever it is, you know, minding its own business. And then all of a sudden noticing me.
Right.
You know, that freaks me out. There is a scene in The Roost that does that perfectly. And even though the majority of the film is pretty much, it's not great. you can not watch it and you won't really be missing anything unless you want to understand more about Ty West. And if you want to understand who he is, mm-hmm. then you watch that movie and you listen and you hear it. Mm-hmm. And I do that. I gush. When I find something or someone that I really admire or something that I love, I will gush about it. And so here I go. I'm gushing. I gush about Grace. I'm gushing about this. And it's the sound. You know, you can just close your eyes and watch The Roost and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. You'll feel where he is. What I feel like really is that he started there. Like you get a sense of who he wants to be. And then it all comes to fruition with House of the Devil. When you watch House of the Devil, you know who he is.
Yeah.
And you want to know that person. I don't even understand anyone ever saying the words House of the Devil is not a good movie. That would not compute.
Yeah.
It wouldn't. You know, I mean, of course, there are going to be those people out there, and I'm sure they are.
Oh, yeah.
But,
you know, I think that
I guess they just don't have the same nostalgic, you know, because it taps into the nostalgic feel, you know.
It does very much. And like I said, having seen Cabin Fever 2 first, I know that carries over similar visual style from this one. But seeing it in this one, it makes a lot more sense and it feels more natural because it is very much his film that he wrote, directed, edited, pretty much fucking made himself. And to be honest, this was actually closer to what I kind of had in mind when I heard Rob Zombie was doing House of a Thousand Corpses. Like mm-hmm. something like this that was very much an homage to that time without, you know, necessarily aping any singular film, but just kind of taking that feeling of those films and it's one of those things where it's the nostalgia thing, and people, this comes up a lot in modern movies where people try to evoke that classic feel of old movies. You know, Grindhouse did it pretty well, I think, but pretty much any movie, and Machete I think did it really well, but so mm-hmm. many movies, especially horror movies that are just bad, try to throw on, oh, let's throw in some, you know, old style special effects and some old, you know, some film grain effects and slap on an old style title and call it good. You know, we'll cover the fact that this movie's modern and it's terrible. Whereas this one was, at first it was, you know, you don't have any solid, it opens with that long shot of the Dee Wallace talking to Samantha. And then the first real hint of what time this is set in was the headphones for me. Because I instantly recognize that old style of headphone. And then you kind of get a feel for it when she's outside walking because her fashion's a little bit out of date. But at the same time, you're thinking, okay, well, you can kind of...
She could be a hipster.
Exactly. It's sort of like that style is still is kind of coming back. So maybe it's modern. But then, you know, with the title, the soundtrack, and then once the world starts to come to be shown more, especially when we see her friend Samantha... And or I'm sorry, Megan, and she's got the Farrah Fawcett hair
right,
at the pizza place. Shop. I was just like, mm-hmm. "Yep, this is definitely the late 70s or early 80s, and this is awesome." So I absolutely loved it. I thought the soundtrack was just
he nailed the look of it
yeah.
too. Like what I said last night, there's a film that I am waiting to make, but I'm waiting to make it when I can make it exactly the way I want to make it, mm-hmm. and that includes it. Having to look like, it has to look like an old, well, it has to look like that. It has to look exactly like House of the Devil. And until, and or, you know, have that same late night horror movie on TV quality for me as like I was, like it was when I was a kid. And if I can't recreate that, then I don't want to do it, because that's, to me, it's important.
Yeah.
And so I'm watching this and I'm like, ah, I want to know what he used. Like, I want to know what he used to shoot this movie. Like, I'm going to, and I haven't done it yet, but I am going to research the hell out of this movie and find out exactly how he did it, because I want to, that's exactly what I want. That's what I need. It's either that or get him to film it for me. And I think my chances of that are not so hot.
Yeah. It was as I was watching it, you know, I'm trying to stay awake because I'd taken my sleeping pill, and I'm like watching this and I'm falling asleep, and I'm like, no, I have to stay awake and watch this. This is fucking really good. And I was watching this like, damn, this is like, it's, for one thing, just thinking about it as someone who's written a script and breaking down scenes in my head of how they would be written on the page, I kept thinking, damn, this is really, really well done. You know, not just visually, but just the way things are put together and how he put shots together, how certain elements flow together. And I was thinking, I was like, damn, I really like this might, like, I was like, well, you know, this is kind of what I was thinking. This is this going with this retro look and this very retro feel to the film is something that I totally want to steal and try and use for another project that I have that I need to finish rewriting. But I'll get into that off the air, because, yeah, y'all, you people don't need to learn about that right now. All in all, House of the Devil, it was fucking brilliant, honestly. One of the best films that I've watched for this show.
I'm so glad. I'm really, really glad, because I loved it, and I was really hoping you'd feel the same way. And
I was, honestly, it's one that I had heard about probably since about the time it came out, and had heard really good things about it online. Had a friend actually had recommended it to me. He said it was really good, and I was like, all right, I'll check it out, and just kept putting it off. It had been sitting on my Netflix instant queue for fucking ever. And I just, you know, you're like, oh, let's do it next week. It's like, all right, great. And was just, I was so disappointed with, you know, I was like, I'd watched Retard Dead and I was really not happy with that. And then I took a few hours really break to play Skyrim. And then I was like, all right, I need to watch House of the Devil rather before tomorrow. Sat down and watched it. And I was just like, wow, this is fucking good. So,
yeah, I redeemed myself with my second pick.
So,
because you're watching Retard Dead going, what in the hell have I got myself into?
Well, I was the one who,
which, by the way, I had never seen it either. So yeah. I didn't know what I was going into with Retard Dead. This one I did know, and I was anxious I really wanted to watch it again. That's why I picked it, because I wanted to see it.
So I would say this is definitely one you need to check out if you haven't seen it yet. Easily a 4 out of 5. Just fucking brilliant. If you haven't seen it, you really should.
I would go a 5 on this. I seriously cannot pick. Okay, you know, one thing I did pick out, and this is being way super picky. At the very end, I turned to Jen and I said, I think I would have faded to black a little bit sooner in the credits. And that is it. That is the only thing I had to say about this movie. I would have faded to black a little bit sooner. And that's just there's nothing technically wrong with what he did. That's what I would have done, you know? So I still don't, I got nothing. I got nothing bad I can say.
Yeah. I think honestly, my only complaint about it was I had a little bit of an issue with how things kind of came together at the very end, with the reveal of all what the hell was going on. That was seemed a little strange. I thought it was building towards something a little different. And then for it to make that sudden jump was a little awkward.
I get that.
But it wasn't like, it wasn't anything that took away from the movie. It was just sort of an, oh, okay, I guess so. And then on we go. And it was still like, all right, I'm still following you because this is a good movie. So I'm willing to let that slide. You know, it wasn't anything like, oh my God, this completely ruined everything. Because that has happened with movies that I've sat and watched and been really into. And suddenly it takes a left turn out of nowhere and it completely ruins everything. This one was just like, that wasn't exactly what I was expecting. But, okay, that's cool. So definitely check it out, people. It's on Instant Watch. It's fucking worth it. For next week, we will be doing House of Fears for It Came from the Instant Queue, which I have seen. I actually really liked it. And we will be doing the, is it 1980, I think, that Maniac came out?
80 or 81, I think it's 80.
Yeah, I think it's 80. We'll be doing Maniac for our feature presentation next week. So, any final thoughts?
Which has one of the greatest headshots ever.
Oh, yeah, Tom Savini got his head blown off. I do remember that. I do remember that scene. That is pretty fucking awesome. So, final thoughts?
No, watch House of the Devil. Yes. That's it. That's it. You know, support Ty West. He's the man. Love him.
Alrighty. So we will.
Next, we're going to watch. Next, we need to watch Innkeepers.
Oh, yeah. I was actually, when I was looking for the poster for House of the Devil, because I was working on some cover art for this week's episode, which ended up being completely different than what I initially intended. House of the Devil has some really fucking awesome posters that were made for it. Just great classic style posters that I was really, really impressed with. So check those out. And Innkeepers, I saw, was another film that he did, because I saw the poster for it. And I was like, I will have to find that, because it looks good, too. Also, I don't recommend looking at IMDb, because the IMDb synopsis completely fucking ruins the plot of the movie. I actually had to cut out like the last maybe line and a half of it for our synopsis, because I was just like, nope, that gives away the whole fucking like last half of the movie. So, I mean, the Netflix explanation's a little bit wonky too, but it's not as bad. So, anyway, that's it for this week. Contact info is at the end of the show. I still haven't updated it yet, but theoretically it'll be updated by the time you hear this episode, hopefully. I'll probably do it tomorrow while I'm editing. So, yeah. Next week, episode 11, House of Fears and Maniac. And thank you, everybody who's listened. It's awesome that we've made it to episode 10. So here's hoping we get to episode 20.
Yay, and I hope I'm still here for it.
Well, I have my intention of firing you, so.
Thanks.
Even though you like Retarded, it's okay. I won't hold that against you. You still like Machete, so that's okay.
I love Machete.
There you go. Bye, everybody. To contact Devour the Podcast, you can email us at cenobitedave@gmail.com. That's cenobitedave@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at ddelamorte. That's capital DDellamorte. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/devourtheblog. You can subscribe on iTunes, search for Devour the Blog, or visit the website devourtheblog.wordpress.com. Our intro song is entitled Gloom Horizon by Kevin McLeod and can be found at incompetech.com.